Good morning, everyone. Welcome back if you've been gone. Welcome back to Staff Council anyway. So let's go ahead and call this meeting to order, and we'll start roll call.
Brad Crick?
Present.
Ashley Monroe?
She will be here, of course.
Joella Sparks?
Here.
Adam Kane?
Here.
Kirsten Bay?
Here.
Evelyn Pinsgard? Selena Brown? Sarah Batiste? Deb Jepson? Mary Alice Short?
Here.
Debbie Gonzalez? Leslie Walls?
Here.
Debbie Coxon?
Here.
Jesse Atencio? Aaron Albertson?
Here.
Greg Simpson?
Here.
Kim Eames? Debbie Blevins? Juan Gula? Robin Winant?
Here.
Trish Winters?
Here.
Jennifer Youngberg?
Here.
Jeanette Altman?
Present.
Emily Hemingway?
Here.
Travis Brinzo?
Here.
Richard Machida?
Here.
Yorko Toivonen?
Here.
Chris Bex? Tom Langdon? Cindy Collins? Tony Abbey? Quorum was met.
All right, on to item 1B, the approval of the agenda for Staff Council meeting number 241. Does anyone have any changes to the agenda?
We cannot hear you, or I cannot hear you.
Sure. Well, I am speaking into the microphone because we are gauging volume. So let's just continue speaking. Okay, sorry. How do I sound now?
Not much better.
All right. I don't hear myself out of the speakers either.
It's hard to hear you.
Okay. Yeah, well. Yeah. Another microphone.
Did that help online? Yeah, I think it's the setting here.
Sorry, that probably isn't helping.
That's okay. Okay, how do I sound now?
Speaker's horrible. Much better.
How do I sound in the room?
Terrible.
How do I crackle it?
Okay, let's try again.
Okay, how about now?
No better. Oh, seriously.
Okay, testing again.
You're fine on the phone.
I think it's on the phone now. We're okay. I think in the room, it's not sounding so great. All right, one more time. How's that sound in the room? Okay, we'll call that.
I'll keep working on it.
Yeah, we'll call that okay for now. Please let me know if you can't. Either hear me or anyone speaking in the room, or if you're in the room and you can't understand what's being said, please feel free to speak up. So the approval of the agenda for today's meeting.
You want a motion to approve the agenda?
Second.
Oh, sorry. Was that a real motion?
I was asking, is that what you're asking for?
I would accept a motion, yes. And was Janet, was that a second?
That was a second. I wasn't sure if the motion was actually made, though. So I move to approve. Thank you.
All right. Any opposition? All right, hearing none, consider the agenda approved. On to next item, approval of the minutes for meeting number 238. That was the April meeting.
I move to approve the April meeting minutes.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, hearing none, the minutes for 238 are approved. Approval of meeting minutes for 239.
I move to approve.
Second.
any opposition or changes? All right, hearing none, the minutes for 239 are approved. Now on to item two. We have no pending actions, and we're now, what are we, 10 minutes? Are we now 10 minutes before public comment, but I'll go ahead and Joelle, can I ask you a side question?
Yes, sir.
Do you normally hold off on public comment, or would you normally hold off and wait until 9, or is it, we almost never have public comment, so.
Yeah, what I would suggest is that you basically say, we'll move to the next item, reserving public comment should somebody come in the next 10 minutes. Yeah, because public, you posted it at that time, you can't really change that one.
Yes. All right, well, we'll move on to, jump ahead to officer reports. And at 9 o'clock, we'll come back and check to see if there's any public comment.
Okay. So about 2 weeks ago, Ashley and I attended the Staff Alliance Retreat. It was held here on campus.
We lost you on the phone. We can't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me at all? If I speak, is it the microphone or is it just me?
It's barely a whisper.
See, and now you find sound fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think we're actually.
All right, how does this sound on online?
Much better.
Okay. You might want to check your microphone.
How's this one doing?
Terrible in the room.
Can you hear it online?
Fine on the phone.
What if we put two mics together?
So out of three mics we've tried up here, it looks like we have one that sounds okay. Am I sounding okay in the room?
Mm-hmm.
Middling? Okay, it's middling in the room. Do I sound okay online?
Yes.
All right. Apologies for the technical confusion. Hopefully we'll get it sorted out. So to the Staff Alliance Retreat, there is a lot covered over 2 days. There is a pretty good summary online at the Staff Alliance Dispatch, which is the Staff Alliance blog. There was a link sent out yesterday. But I'll cover more specifics here, too. So let's see, of the topics covered, we talked about UA's bullying program that's in draft. They're working on a draft. Staff Alliance has been given, since that meeting, Staff Alliance has been given a draft copy of this, and we've been asked to give feedback back on it by this Thursday, I think. No, yes, by tomorrow. Goodness. The specifics of it will include likely training for supervisors and staff, definitions on what bullying is, what it isn't, possibly how to approach or deal with it, avenues to take if someone feels that they are being bullied, including going to their supervisor, going to statewide HR, and so on. I don't know if we have a timeline on when that will be rolled out university-wide. I don't remember hearing a date.
I don't either. I think they're still in the working phase of it. They didn't have a rollout date.
But we should be hearing more, you know, within, I assume within the next year. You know, there will be, hopefully sooner, more details about that. We heard about the next steps for SDI, shaping Alaska's future. This should start coming down to staff. The chancellors are looking at targets to, you know, ways to improve, and it should come down to staff to be looking for ways to improve our processes and policies, make ourselves more efficient. We heard about the wellness program. Some of you may have received or heard via either via the grapevine, literally via the UAF grapevine. There was a post, a question to it that Erica Van Flyn answered, or via email or word of mouth that there is going to be a new vendor. So we got some details on that process. There was an intent to award sometime after July 1st. That kicked off a protest period. There was a protest, and that started a new process where procurement reviewed the specifics of the disagreement, you know, in the protest, reviewed their policies, reviewed what happened. That was supposed to end on August 16th. So there, at least as of the retreat, there is not officially a new vendor yet. Erica Van Flyn, the director of benefits, told us that they would be giving out information as they, when they had it. But she did give us a rough timeline for when we could start hearing about changes to the wellness program, because it will be different. The WIN contract will go until October 1st, and then the new contract will need about 90 days to get set up. So she expected that October, November would be the time when benefits would be getting out a lot of information to the university, and then in December or January, the new wellness program would be set up. And please feel free to interrupt if you have questions. I was expecting there might be questions about the wellness program specifically. So if you have any, please let me know. Do you have any other thoughts on that?
It was a popular item that I think some of us are hearing about in our units. So feel free to share that information. If you want to refer them to a written piece on the Staff Alliance blog, Ally, which you should have the link for now. There's a piece that has been written up, so you can share that with your units, and it kind of goes into detail about how the procurement process works, because I think that was where the confusion was. There was a lot of people that were expecting immediate answers, but due to the State of Alaska regulations, questions really couldn't be answered, it sounds like, by the benefits office. So hopefully that helped clear a few of those questions and concerns up.
I have a comment. This is Jeanette Altman. I don't know if you can hear me online. Let me know if you can't. My question, or maybe it's just a plea for our leadership to get as much information as they can about the new wellness program, mostly in regard to just some kind of titterings I've heard across campus, is how biometrics gathered by Win for Alaska gathered our biometrics, but I've heard that our biometrics will or could in the future affect our healthcare premiums. And like I said, it's very murky. I'm not getting a real official word on how that's going to happen. So I personally, as a staff council representative, I'm interested in hearing about how and why those decisions are being made.
And actually, I'm sorry, Jeanette, we'll interrupt you for just one moment. It's now 9 o'clock, so if I'll ask for, is there any public comment either here in the room or online? All right, hearing none, back to Jeanette's question. I think we did receive some information about what the program might look like. I believe that some of the changes to the wellness program have actually been discussed in SHCC and JHCC. And Debbie, I might ask you if you can weigh in on that if that was a topic of discussion, because I'm not 100% sure. But
we have not met since the last meeting was at the end of May, so I don't have any other information from what you have right now.
Yeah, but in meetings in the last 6 months or so, was that, you know, that there would be different criteria for the wellness program going forward? Was that part of discussion?
I don't think anything was ever set in stone.
Okay.
There was discussion, but nothing set.
Well, if I might, through the chair, they don't have a plan yet. They've acknowledged that we are transitioning to that, where biometrics will affect your premiums and your healthcare benefit, yes, but they don't have a plan yet. And I think that's the priority item for the Joint Healthcare Committee this year. So I would keep an eye out and certainly keep demanding the information, because there is no doubt it's going to be tied.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not happening tomorrow?
No.
Okay. I think what was mentioned is the potential for probably the earliest would be about 2 years.
Okay.
So this year and next year will kind of be baseline data that would be collected is what they're kind of looking at right now.
Yeah. What was discussed at the retreat as far as specifics for the program, and to follow up on what Joella said, you know, I don't know if this will be changing or not. I don't know if this is what the program will look like when they have specifics ready to send out to everyone. But what they told us was, say, that there will be, say, preferred pricing if you participate in the wellness program. Up to, the number wasn't set, but it could be up to a 30% rebate on your premium, the amount that comes out of your paycheck. And the first year, say, would be based on whether or not you participated in submitting biometrics, either through the wellness program, or whatever vendor they're going to be setting up for that, or even through your own doctor, and that would be all you'd need to do for the first year. The second year would be participating in some kind of program to start, you know, maybe leading to improvement, and the third year would be, say, showing improvements. But they did specify that, you know, showing improvement doesn't necessarily or really mean that you, say, have, you know, dropped some number. It could mean one example given was that if you're a smoker, the second year you participate in smoking cessation program, the third year you've stopped smoking. But how exactly that's going to work, you know, we don't know, but they indicated that it wouldn't be you have to be showing progression, you know, in order to qualify, you know, in the sense of, yeah, dropping numbers, but we don't know for sure.
Thank you.
This is Kirsten in Nome, and I don't know if you know, but what was the change in provider just purely a financial thing, that like this new one? I mean, the name was out on that information on the blog site, but that just that they're coming in at a lesser cost. And do they have to, I guess, why did they put out a request for proposal? Is it a requirement to do that every certain, you know, every year, or when they have a particular provider has a contract for a certain period of time, and then they have to kind of look for, do a request for proposal? I mean, it just seems crazy to change horses all the time. And if it's just going to, now we have a new provider, but then, you know, 2 years from now, there may be another different one, or.
This is Ashley, and I can answer at least part of that. Basically, with rules, when you spend so much money, when a price is so high, you do have to go out to bid every so often. It's not just, you can't just pick a vendor. They have to bid. It's State of Alaska procedure, and it was not just money that the committee took into account. So committee actually looked at what was offered. There were set minimums required, and I believe what Erica was telling us was that there had to be in person, there had to be
classes, there had to be biometrics, there was a set minimum, and so it came down to just a handful of bids that had that set minimum. They compared not only price, but they compared services as well, and this was the recommendation of the committee, was the company that they went with, and the name is escaping me right now.
Healthy Roads.
Healthy Roads, thank you. It was not just a money-based decision.
But that company has not been fully chosen yet, correct?
I believe as of this week, there should be a decision because that protest period ended on Friday. But I have not heard since Friday if what the decision was about the protest. But we'll look into that.
Yeah, my sense is that people out away from the Fairbanks area get very, very little out of this program. I mean, I don't know whether Healthy Roads is going to do anything different, what they can do different, but, you know, having somebody come out once a year and give little, you know, 15-minute talks, you know, is really nothing. And, you know, having somebody to be able to, you know, call up and be a little, you know, health coach. Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know what percentage of employees are not in the Fairbanks area, but, I just don't know that anybody in the rural areas pays much attention to it.
Well, that concern was definitely brought up to the director of benefits, basically exactly what you were saying.
This is Adam, and I've seen at least one employee that participates in the Win for Alaska, and it was mostly for the monetary gain. They were saying, you know, if you lose this many pounds or whatever, you get $50 or something, but it was, I think, very little participation from Bristol Bay campus.
If I might, I would really encourage, especially the Rural Affairs Committee and the rural staff, to really, really be watching this, because if they are ultimately in the next year or two tying this biometric screening, et cetera, wellness to our benefit, you absolutely have a right to demand the same availability of resources as main campus staff.
This is Jeanette. I will add that to our next meeting agenda for Rural Affairs Committee.
Other questions about the wellness program? I will add that at least one person on Staff Alliance apparently looked at Healthy Roads' site and was at least impressed by what they apparently had in terms of online offerings. So it may be something also, Jeanette, to look at for Rural Affairs, to look at their site and see, you know, what they currently have. Of course, I have no idea if that is going to translate into what will be available for staff when this program gets rolled out. But apparently their offerings are a bit more robust than Win for Alaska.
Yeah, I did check them out, and their site does look very impressive. My biggest concern as a staff council representative and an employee of the university is that as long as it stays in kind of a carrot type of thing, like if you do this, you will benefit, and less as a stick, as if you fail in some way, you will be penalized. I just think it's a slippery slope that we should all be looking out for.
So at the Staff Alliance retreat, we also discussed a draft performance evaluation from the president going out to statewide employees. That's on our agenda later, so we'll cover that under unfinished business. We also discussed a possibility of a smoke-free campus. This is something that's come up from students at UAA. They brought this to the Board of Regents meeting in early spring, I believe. And it's something that Dana Thomas would like feedback from Staff Alliance about. What do staff think about the possibility of a smoke-free campus? So that might be something for staff affairs to be thinking about. I believe there will be a poll set up by Staff Alliance to ask for feedback, and when, because I will follow up on that because it's not there yet. When that poll is there, we'll be sending it out and asking for our staff to provide their feedback that way. one big item that we spent some time discussing was a compensation increase for FY15. Staff Alliance was asked for a number. We spent quite a lot of time informally talking about it, aware of the Board of Regents budget directions, which are to expect compensation increases at a lower level than have been historically seen. Also of the governor's budget, which instead of being a, or the governor's budget instructions, instead of being a reduction, which was as expected, apparently he called for flat funding, and specifically said that salary increases were something that could be funded, which is very positive. The Staff Alliance recently had a discussion, or not recently had a discussion, but the Staff Alliance Vice Chair had a discussion with Michelle Rizek and put this discussion into a letter which was sent to the President's office indicating that Staff Alliance is looking at least a 2.2% increase, just, and that would be really just covering inflationary costs. And cost of living is something that is, cost of living increase is something that's required by Board of Regents policy and regulation. However, that increase, you know, would not be sufficient for, you know, the increased geographic costs in various areas, and that we'd like to see some of the, you know, compensation proposals considered and possibly be funded. And for those online, Chancellor Rogers has just joined us. And, welcome.
Thank you.
Might need to get up really close to the microphone.
Okay. Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome back for a new semester. This is always an exciting time of year, particularly so this year at the Fairbanks campus, where we all wonder if it's going to be ready when the students show up next in a week. The level, I appreciate everybody putting up with the level of construction that we've had to deal with this summer. For some of you, that's meant vibration in your offices. For many, it's meant diverting from your normal route to get to and from work, to and from Wood Center. I saw on the UAF memes yesterday the note about a detour from the detour that you normally take as a detour. And it's really felt that way over the course of the summer. I hope what we have coming out the other end of all of this construction is a better university for our students, for our faculty and staff. I'm excited that tomorrow we're dedicating the Margaret Murray Building. For those on the West Ridge who put up with the vibration of 2 years ago, getting through that construction and reopening the parking, I think is going to be a real plus. I had the opportunity to tour the addition to this building, the Wood Center, two nights ago, and it's going to be a pretty impressive facility for our students the expanded dining options, as well as the dining space, new coffee shop, and better offices for the student services staff. So I think that's going to be a real plus. Engineering, they assure me that we're going to have the entrances to Duckering and Bunnell built in time for people to get into the two doors that are now blocked. So it's going to be an interesting next 10 days or so. I guess the most work that affects people's movement around campus is scheduled to be completed by September 5 when classes start. This is a challenging budget year. I think we're all aware of the situation that we started the year with a deficit. We think we've worked up a plan that addresses all of that. That has resulted in some position reductions. And I think as we look out over the next couple of years, The governor, the legislature have made it clear that we can't expect the kind of growth we've had in the last few years. And so, you know, that's going to challenge us, I think, in the next couple of years for how we adapt to this new fiscal environment. We're not in a situation that our colleagues in the lower 48 have been in the last few years where we've seen 10-20% reductions or across-the-board salary reductions. I don't see that in the picture. But what I do see is a squeeze on. And I think what that means for us is probably on the order of annual reallocation decisions or reduction decisions on the order of what we saw this year. And so what that means, I think, is for us to learn to be more flexible and adaptive to that environment. And that we've had enough turnover each year that on the average UAF is about 250 to 300 positions a year that people turn over. That we should be in a position, if people are trained to move from job to job, that people don't lose their jobs as a result of the kind of decisions we'll have to make in the upcoming years. But what that requires us is to make a new commitment to training and development of staff so that if, as part of a future change, someone's job is eliminated, that they have the skills to move to another job. And so what I want to work with staff council on this year is how to design a program that helps staff develop skills that make them ready in case that happens. Now, certainly, we're going to keep fighting for the budget. And, in fact, our request to the president for UAS budget for next year is a healthy increase, healthy in today's environment increase of about 4%. And I expect the Board of Regents will approve and send to the governor a request for an increased budget. But I think looking at the situation in Juneau, the likelihood that we'll get our request is not high. We're likely to get pieces of it. You know, there'll be one or two things that legislators decide, yeah, we want to do something with. But the kind of annual progression that we've seen now for 12 years, and for some people, every year of your history here at the university has been one of increase. I've been through the other side of that. I've been through the year we saw a 20% decrease. That's not pretty. And again, I don't expect to see that. But even a flat budget means it's going to be a challenge because every year our costs go up. Salary costs go up. Benefits costs most years go up. And the cost of oil goes up, costs of other commodities go up. And so even just addressing those will require some change. So again, it's you know, the idea for the supervisory training program that we started a little over 4 years ago came from staff council telling me you wanted better supervisors. And so we kicked off that program. After 2 years, we made modifications to that program to try to make it a better program. And I think we have a better skill set among supervisors today than we did 5 years ago. So now the question is, what do we do that makes it easier for people to learn? How do we encourage supervisors to make sure they encourage staff to take time to take courses at UAF, to take SkillSoft, to do the other things that put you in a better position should you be impacted to move. Now, we've tried to create some incentives in our current, you know, I think everybody's aware of the vacancy management plan that we have that holds most positions open for 90 days without filling them. But if a supervisor hires off the layoff list, it's only a 45-day hold. So that's an incentive to hire off the layoff list if someone is laid off. If they hire somebody from within, then you're not hitting both positions for 90 days. So again, that's to try to create an economic incentive for promotion from within. So if you have ideas for other things that we could do that help ensure that should someone be affected in at some time over the next few years, that they have other options within UAF. We want to know about them. We want your help in designing a program that works. And my commitment to you is to keep pushing that with HR, with deans and directors, that we understand that should we have to make reductions, it's not about the trying to get rid of people. It may be shedding the number of jobs that we have or reducing to some extent, but it's not on the people side. So that's my commitment to you, and I hope you'll help me find ways to improve, to make this a learning organization for everyone. And that'll be part of my message during the convocation. Welcome back September 19th as well, so that the deans and directors and students hear it as well. That's my primary message today. We've got program review processes going on. Academic program review of academic programs has been going on regularly for years, with every program being reviewed every 5 years, with a comprehensive review 2 years ago. We're extending that out to the research programs, student services, advancement support programs as well, really looking at how can we do better, who's best in class out there, what can we learn from others that do it well. And so that process may be one of the processes that leads to where do we want to invest, because even at a time that we have to make cuts, we have to be investing in areas that we want to grow. So some challenging times ahead. I think we have a staff and faculty and administration that's adaptable enough to be able to deal with it, but I'm going to need your help to make it successful. And for those people who want to stay at UAF, and I hope that includes all of you, people who want to stay at UAF can stay at UAF. So that's the message today. Let me handle any questions that people have.
Chancellor, what time will the convocation be?
The convocation, I'm pretty sure, is at 1 o'clock on Thursday the 19th. We try to schedule it during that 1 to 2 break on a Tuesday or Thursday. I think it's 1 to 2, but they'll be noticed out on that.
Chancellor, this is Adam Kane from the Bristol Bay campus. I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead.
Okay. The first one, you were speaking a lot about turnover, and I really appreciate the attempt to change people's positions instead of laying them off. And I had a question about the 3-month fine that's put onto the campus if they fill a Fund 1 position. And I'm not sure if I understand it entirely, but if I understand it correctly, it is hurting us as staff members, because we're unable to fill all the open positions without having to pay a lot of fines. And it just so happened that we had a lot of turnover in our Fund 1 this year. And so I think there's about 4 or 5 positions, and if we have to pay 3 months' salary on each of them, that's a significant amount of money that I think is really going to hurt us out here. And it seems that they're in some ways trying to fill in by not hiring people and have people do 2 jobs, and it makes it difficult. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that.
Certainly. One of the measures we took to address the deficit we went into the year with was an attempt to grab vacancy savings. So our hole was about $8 million in all. $3 million of that we're making up through this holding positions vacant during the when they go vacant. The alternative to that was, or what we have done in the past years, and certainly there are other alternatives as well, but in past years we've done an across-the-board reduction that everybody takes a budget hit. That's forced some into a layoff situation. In order to avoid layoffs, in part, we chose the using the vacancy management approach, knowing that's a very opportunistic approach rather than the more mechanistic approach of a 2% across the board pullback or something like that. The effect is differential. There are some units that have higher turnover than others. of the savings at the vice chancellor level, so basically 2/3 of the savings go into making up the central deficit, the deficit that affects UAF as a whole. 1/3 goes to the appropriate vice chancellor, who can essentially, we did that to allow some flexibility to address the issues that come up when, for example, one unit has too much turnover. It was the best of bad choices. You know, the third choice would have been to do specific reductions to programs and services totaling $3 million. The attempt to go after vacancies was really came out of the philosophy that I started with, which is we're trying not to affect people who are holding jobs today. And so it does affect those working in the office, certainly. We know that. I know that with my executive officer, my number two deputy, who retired the 31st of May, I've had my number two position in my office vacant for all of July and August. I also know that with my administrative assistant in the office, Jessica went up to work at IAB, that position's vacant. So I feel it acutely myself and understand. I feel your pain, I guess, is the message. And it's not easy. But again, among choices, that the reason we did it was really an attempt to be as good as possible to the people who are here. I hope that helps you see why we went in that direction. We haven't yet made a decision as to what we would do in a similar circumstance next year, whether that's the right approach or whether a different approach. Now, of the positions that have come vacant, about 1/3 have just been held vacant for that period of time to get the savings. About 1/3, people have said, we really want this position. We'll pay to fill it so that the savings still accrue. And then we have exempted some based on critical issues within the unit. But that decision, every one of those, is reviewed by the full cabinet, regardless of what unit it's in.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Through the chair, if I might, Chancellor Rogers, is it in this particular instance when you're talking about a single department or a school? Are the rules hard and fast? Is it possible the director or the dean might ask for special consideration given the volume of turnover in their department?
Yes.
Okay.
And although I've lost 1.5 of 3.5, I haven't asked for separate dispensation, but
you have to set an example.
I have the option to do so, and am acutely feeling the results of not asking.
Yeah, if I might also prompt the chair, you have a list of questions for the chancellor that you're face to face last week.
Yes.
And were there any of those that we wanted to follow up on?
Ashley, would you like to?
I think we had a great conversation last week, and that's definitely something that we'll bring up when we continue our officers' reports. Just since you're here, can you talk about the January 3rd date? Because I know that was some questions that I had been asked.
Yeah. So January 3rd, this is the one of those years where our holiday falls on a Wednesday, Thursday, and so with the mandatory closure will be the Friday after Christmas, and then the Monday, Tuesday between Christmas and New Year's. That will be the same three-day mandatory closure we've had all the rest of the time. Friday, the 3rd of January, will be optional for employees and actually optional at the department level as well, so what we call a soft closure. That is that no department can mandate that people not come to work that day, but departments have the option of closing that day unless they are essential to the operation of Wintermester or other activities on the campus. And Wintermester will be operating January 3rd, Friday, and January 4th, Saturday. So there are a few departments that won't be able to. But that word should be out in Cornerstone this week, and so that people have time to think about vacation planning. I know a lot of employees would like to take that additional one day in order to get three more days of holiday. But again, that's not a mandatory, that's an optional.
So it has been approved?
Yes. And we've had the cabinet discussion, so everybody's aware of that. I have asked that the cabinet members essentially find out which offices plan to be closed so that we can let people know about that, and so that if there are any issues that come up, that we can be ready for it. But again, I want to make sure that again, it is not that the department decides whether to be open or not. The department can decide to be closed, but somebody within the department can come to work if they have work to do and want to be at work.
Chancellor Rogers, last January, this is Jeanette Altman for those who are online. Last January, you spoke about the possibility of perhaps letting people borrow against their vacation so they wouldn't have to go with leave without pay on that hard closure. Is that something that you have discussed?
The issue of borrowing against vacation has come up a few times at the system level. I don't think we have a determination as to whether that's possible or not. But I'll take that up again.
Thank you.
Chancellor Rogers.
Will there be any soft closure prior to the holidays, like the Monday and Tuesday that's normally issued? Or is January 3rd the only day that's going to be issued as soft closure?
Certainly. We had not thought about nobody's raised the issue of whether there could be closure during that time, but certainly if a department, if people are everybody in the department wants to take leave and it's not going to impact other departments, I'd have no objection to that. But really the focus has much more been on the January 3rd rather than the...
I know this year grades are due on December 24th.
Yeah. I think
just about every department is pretty much going to be open.
Yeah, I think, and that's I think the reason that we, and actually the last year we looked at the before and it did create some challenges, and so, but again, for individual, you know, so then it's individual and supervisor discussion during that period of time.
Well, I think that was it for what I wanted to clarify. I don't want to take your question times away from other things that we've already received answers on. So,
I did get a note. Somebody was interested in what's going on with the Win for Alaska program. I don't know if you covered that already before I came in.
We did talk about it. I don't know if you may have more details than we do. Our details are about 2 weeks old.
Okay. As of yesterday, I knew nothing about it. As of last night, I knew what I read in the grapevine. What I know as of this morning is that there is a proposed contract award to a new vendor. It's been protested by Win for Alaska. That protest will go through the normal procurement process. I don't know any details about the new the proposed vendor award in terms of what the Alaska program is. But in going to their website, it appears that they have a different incentive system than Win for Alaska has had that's much more focused on if you make progress on your health goals in one semester, you get credit on your health care costs in the next semester. That's what they, or the next period. That's what they talk about on their website, but whether that's the case for their Alaska proposal or not, I don't know. I do know there was a committee that included staff from around that helped do the evaluations, but beyond that, as you know, all the staff benefit issues are dealt with out of the system office. So I expect we'll know within a few days what the result of the protest is and whether that means an award back to Win, whether the award stays with the proposed new vendor or something beyond that.
Joella?
Chancellor Rogers, thank you. I had a follow-up question on your program reviews statements. I'm particularly interested in the non-academic program reviews, whether they're administrative or fiscal, I'm not sure your definition, but my question is, the program reviews as they're being conducted, I've not heard or seen who and how these are done, and my question is the opportunity undergoing the review given the department undergoing the review given the opportunity to provide feedback,
of course.
An explanation. What I'm hearing about is changes being made, and people, staff people in particular, saying they didn't know that this was happening or coming, or didn't know where they could provide feedback.
Well, there certainly are changes ahead of the program review that have been happening, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But the program review process will be over the course of this coming academic year for each of our research programs and each of the support programs. Each vice chancellor was tasked with designing a process and rolling that out in September.
And so is there a schedule of reviews, for example, when a department might expect a review to be going on?
No.
Okay.
Not yet. At least, that was scheduled to be rolled out in September, so I haven't. It's not out yet.
All right. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions for the chancellor, either in the room or online?
Trish Winters. So I was wondering if there's any kind of a brainstorming group to talk about creative ways of dealing with the deficit. For instance, looking at some of the students in foreign countries that are increasingly interested in online courses. Is there a group, or is there a way to participate in that?
Yes, there is. There's a website collecting ideas that people have on either the revenue side or the cost-saving side. And certainly if staff council wanted to put together an ad hoc committee to look at ideas, I'd be very receptive to those. We look for good thoughts for wherever they may come. We have a lot of activities out there already. One of our biggest, for example, recruitment of international, we actually brought in a consultant to help us look at what countries would we be most successful in targeting, what disciplines would we be most successful in targeting, where are there the best opportunities. The challenge in using that example is it requires a certain level of investment to get there. International Programs and Initiatives Office would need to staff up a little bit to handle all the visa issues, for example. And so we're, one of the areas there looking at what's the model of how we use the revenue from that covers not only the instructional costs but also the student service and support costs. And one of the things in the consultant first round review, we don't have the complete support infrastructure that many universities do for working with international students. And that's a better ESL program would be a piece of that. We have an ESL program, but more robust and potentially through the summer, so there's a better preparation for fall classes. And then visa support is a really significant staff time issue. But that's one that we're actively pursuing. Another one on the student side is working with community colleges in Washington and Oregon to try to attract community college graduates from those systems to Alaska, because we generally have room for upper division students in classes. If we attract more freshman students, we end up having to offer more sections, and so there's not a net revenue out of that. If we attract more upper division students, there's actually net revenue to the university. So that's why focusing on the community colleges. And we have a really good partnership with the Seattle Community College District right now that's a little bit of both. Students are accepted into the SCCD for an associate degree and accepted into UAF for a baccalaureate degree at the same time. So they do their first 2 years in Seattle and then essentially seamlessly transfer here. Now, we just signed that agreement last another year or two before we start getting the students. But that's an example of what we're doing to try to address the revenue side.
Awesome. So you said there's a website? Where
yes, and I don't know what it is offhand, but go to the UAFOMB and you can find it from there.
I sent that link out a couple months ago, but we'll make sure to get it out again within a couple days.
I'm sorry, through the chair, I did have one more question. At the Staff Alliance retreat a couple of weeks ago, we did talk about ways to enable staff to find other opportunities for employment at the university, and one of them one item that was discussed was a preference for recruiting internally first.
Mm-hmm.
That has in the past been a policy, an unofficial policy of UAF HR, and staff was discussing a way to make that an official statewide policy. I'm wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, I think rather than mandating, I've tried to incent, and that's where the 45 versus 90-day vacancy is a pretty strong incentive for most people. And so I think that's working fairly well. What I hear from Brad is we're doing pretty well at finding placements for people whose jobs are affected internally.
Thank you.
All right, and we are running over, so I'll ask if there's any last question. We'll say question. Anyone have one last question for the Chancellor?
Well, then, again, thank you for your service on staff council. I look forward to a great academic year.
And so we were in the middle of officer report, but skip ahead and, well, not skip ahead, but move ahead to Faculty Senate report. Welcome, David Valentine.
My live here.
Maybe off. The mics are a little spotty today, so we may have to speak very close to the mic.
So with apologies for folks who are online, am I coming through the mic or not? Okay. So my name is David Valentine, as Brad mentioned. I'm the incoming president of the Faculty Senate. And similar to your structure, we also have a faculty alliance across the three MAUs. And I just came back from our retreat down in Anchorage, where we discussed a lot of issues in common across the three universities comprising the system. One of the things that came up, and maybe you already talked about this, so I apologize for walking in a bit late, but is we've been asked to sort of look at the system governance handbook and make recommendations for changes and updates to that handbook. And, of course, that handbook covers not just faculty alliance and Senate and all that sort of stuff, but also student governance and staff governance across the three universities. One of the items that came up was, essentially looking at the various structures within statewide governance. One of them was something that none of us was familiar with, which was essentially a statewide governance council consisting of members of the alliance from faculty, students, and staff. And we weren't familiar with that. We hadn't seen that before. I don't know if perhaps the staff alliance has been more active in that, but we wondered whether that entity really was still alive and still functioning, because we hadn't really talked about that. And we thought, well, we might want to start talking about maybe just killing that off. As our discussion went on, however, we started sort of going through some of the upcoming challenges of this next year, things like how are we going to make ends meet? And what should we be doing about tuition? Do we want to have a voice about tuition? Well, that's not really a faculty issue. It's not really just a student issue. It's kind of an issue across all of the various aspects. So we started to realize that issue and a couple of others that we ran across were issues that we really wanted to have a conversation across the not just faculty alliance, but across the other two components of system-wide governance. So what I'd like to do is to begin a conversation with the staff leadership and the student leadership about essentially seeing if that body can be resurrected and staffed, and then begin to have conversations about those issues of broad concern. So that was the main thing that I wanted to talk about today to you all. And we'll be having our first Faculty Senate meeting the Monday starting the beginning of classes. So, and Brad, I guess you'll be there.
Oh,
right?
Oh, yes, at your first Senate meeting.
Yes. And I'd be happy to take any questions if there's time.
I have a comment about the I'm going to get the names of these committees wrong, but they're the statewide or the system-wide governance, well, I don't know if I got the right name there, but the system-wide group is something that's been talked about. I think we're agreed that we'd like to see that group be more active and that it should have a place. Locally, there's also a group, there should be a group consisting of UAF faculty, staff, and students. Ashley and I would love to get together with you and with ASUAF and talk about, if there are issues all three of us are all three groups are looking forward to and ways we can work together. Any other questions for David Valentine?
David, did you have any discussion about a concrete workbook?
We did not. Let me amend that. I think somebody mentioned it once, but it was not a discussion.
Maybe that is something that is our group that because it affects everybody.
Right. The issues like tuition, that sort of thing, health, they do cut across all three universities.
Any other questions? All right. Hearing none. Thank you very much. And I look forward to coming to Faculty Senate.
Great. Thank you.
All right. I know we are running behind. I apologize. I will try to finish up that Staff Alliance report real quick. Before the Chancellor came in, I was talking about the compensation number. The range that Staff Alliance gave to Michelle was 2.5 to 3.5, which is what we're saying would be an appropriate increase. Of course, that's not necessarily related to what will eventually be in the budget. I would expect we'll know more in September. The university budgets are given to the Board of Regents, and in November, the Board of Regents would be approving the budget request to be sent on to the governor's office. So we will hopefully know in a month or two what the university is thinking for a compensation number.
And just to give you a comparison, the state ASEA just negotiated and they received a 1% compensation increase. Just to give you a comparison to what we had heard and kind of where we were coming from and what we took into consideration when we were coming up with numbers.
If I might.
Please.
We also, a part of the conversation, in addition to ASEA, which is the state's largest union, and their three-year contract was a 1%, 1%, 2.5% over the life of the contract. We also discussed the one of the faculty unions who received an extension on their contract. All of the faculty unions are beginning the process of negotiating their next contract. One, however, received an extension, and in that extension, they got 2.5%. If I could ask our leadership, in your one-on-one with the chancellor, did you bring up the increase? Was he receptive, or how would you describe his?
We did.
That time, Staff Alliance had the discussion about the number had been informal, so I don't think we thought we didn't want to bring it up to the chancellor because we didn't want to represent or misrepresent Staff Alliance before it had been brought up. But we did talk about compensation with the chancellor,
and he too mentioned mentioned the contract for 1%, but did not give a number on what he thought. But he was saying that he was supportive and going to the. I think they were having a some sort of meeting with the president's office to kind of discuss some of the budget issues, and he was going to go into that meeting supportive of staff increases, but did not give us a number.
I just want you to know my tongue's a little bloody from biting back, asking him if he was going to accept an increase and what kind of support he would give it.
Your range of numbers that you're suggesting is 2.5 to 3.5?
Right. Other questions about that topic? Okay, so I'll be real quick then with the last few things. One interesting thing that came out of President Gamble's meeting with Staff Alliance was that it sounded like there is an offer made to, or would be an offer made to the CHRO candidate. That's just an offer. I have no idea if it was accepted or not, but I thought that was interesting. There was a finalist, and it sounds like at least there was an offer made.
For what?
For the chief HR officer at Statewide. I apologize. And let's see. I had one other thing, but now I've missed it. So I think. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, here it is. A quick note that the Yana Taylor case, the non-retention case that the Alaska Supreme Court ruled on recently, apparently is opened the door on Chapter 4 of Board of Regents policy and regs, and the policy and reg review is still going on. But specifically, that case may mean that we'd have some room to make more suggestions about HR policy. So something to look forward at, I think. That's all I've got.
Well, first I'll say thank you for bearing with us on our first go-around. It can only get more efficient from here, I think. I just want to follow up on one thing with Brad with the CHRO. Officer, Brad and Joel and I did have an opportunity to go up for a meet and greet question and answer period during his in-person interview when he was here. And so we did have an opportunity to meet, but we did not have an opportunity to provide feedback really on what we thought about the position. So I know I have not heard whether the offer was accepted or not. So that's something that we will follow up on. Last week, Brad and I had an opportunity to meet with Chancellor Rogers, and it was a good introduction to him and to our one-on-one meetings, and a good introduction, hopefully, for him to us. But we talked about the budget, which already reported on a little bit. We mentioned that about the performance evaluation that President Gamble is passing out, and he is very interested in UAF feedback, and so. Do we have a link?
It's for the we actually have the evaluation is in your packet, and I believe a link was sent out too. But definitely it's in this meeting's packet.
It is a statewide survey, the link, but there should be a place where you input that you are UAF, and the chancellor is highly encouraging staff to go in, take a look at that evaluation form, and provide feedback. He is very interested in seeing what we think about the evaluation form to see if he wants to adopt that as UAF or to adopt another or other forms. So please go ahead and take a look at that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. The smoke-free campus, we did ask Chancellor Rogers what his thoughts were on smoke-free campus. And personally, he is supportive of it, however, understands that if adopted, it would need to be a statewide initiative that anything less would pin campuses against one another for recruiting purposes, whether for students, faculty, or staff. And so it sounds like that will be something that we take on more as Staff Alliance with the President's Office rather than Staff Council. Yeah.
Can I see the evaluation form for a minute?
Yes. Yeah.
Chris Beck, OIP, that's for those online. Would this evaluation form be in addition to any department evaluation forms? Because OIP currently is, at least my department, has a very robust evaluation procedure at this point that I think is much more encompassing and robust than the form that I just looked at. And a lot of time and resources was put into that by both our CITO as well as our CIO. And so While I like that we're looking at this, has there been any communication about that, and would this replace that? Because if so, that's a concern for me.
Yet to be determined. How it stands now is that is President Gamble's evaluation form. He is using it for statewide staff currently, or as of now. He will not, as of right now, will not tell chancellors at each MAU to use that. Chancellors have the opportunity to use that. And so that's where kind of providing feedback is going to be sent, not only to Chancellor Rogers, but to President Gamble as well. The statewide staff assembly has had a survey done with them and is now opening that up for everyone, so that, and that's the link that got sent out. So you do have an opportunity to provide that and to write comments about your own evaluation form. I'm sure Chancellor Rogers would like that feedback as well.
Okay. Thanks.
We talked about staff development, which Chancellor Rogers reported on. He also, we talked about the 90-day hold. We had a lot of discussion about the 90-day hold and the estimated $3 million. We'll ask for better numbers in October, which is when he said that they would have more definite numbers on the cost savings, how much was actually saved, and do plan on asking him for the numbers saved, not only the amount saved, but also in comparison to perhaps the amount of overtime increases that may have been spent due to staff working extra to cover the vacant positions. Let's see, we talked about some of the committees that exist. Those are new. Some of the committees that exist and whether they are still active or not. And the big thing that we ended with was kind of where did Chancellor Rogers see staff council going in the next year? If he had a choice of direction, kind of where did he see us going? And his comment was that he wanted to see UAF and on a list for top 10 places to work and encouraged staff council and staff representatives to figure out ways that we can make UAF a top 10 place to work. So it led into a discussion about the now we believe non-existent work-life balance committee and whether that needs to be reinstated in order to try to come up with this, or if it can be worked into another committee that may already be working. So that's going to lead Brad and I to some research, I think, trying to figure out whatever happened with the work-life balance committee. And Joelle looks like she might have an answer for us.
It was handed off to Chris Racina, and she was overwhelmed in her HR director position, and basically it was not a priority. Last I heard, it was still under, actually went with her. There was some disagreement between she and Brad as to whether or not it went with her to student services or it stayed with Brad. One of the things that we discovered at the Alliance retreat was the EAP program, and I'm wondering if you might suggest or ask for a volunteer, and I will not volunteer, an evaluation of the intent of the Work-Life Balance Committee alongside the resources available through the EAP program, the Employee Assistance Program. It may be that our efforts might be better spent promoting that benefit that already exists for staff. And then there were other issues, like, for example, the work-life balance kind of grew out of the closing of the early childhood lab school for the summer. So if issues like that were to pop up, they might end up in staff affairs rather than a work-life balance committee. So just a thought.
Well, one of the examples that I brought forward, and he had a comment and wrote it down to kind of discuss with Cabinet, is flexibility of schedules. And I gave him a very specific example of a staff member in my unit who pays for child support for 10 minutes each morning, pays an extremely large amount of money for 10 minutes each morning because she has to expected to be at work at 8 o'clock and her kid's bus comes at 7:50. So she has to leave at 7:40 to be at work on time, and there's 10 minutes where she can't be home because her supervisor won't allow a flexible schedule. And so that's an example that I brought up and something that
Doesn't seem to, I don't know if it's really staff affairs, it's not EAP, so kind of, we're not sure. Did you have a comment, Mary Ann?
No, I just think it's something that staff affairs committee could look into.
Okay.
I think it fits under the charge of staff affairs.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. So maybe we'll have a side conversation on a little bit of that in more detail about what we discussed.
So this new UAF being one of the top 10 places serving, top 10 places.
Didn't specify, but I think we're just hoping, I think, to get somewhere on the top 10 of this goal. And then once we get local, maybe we'll think more abroad.
Top 10 of the hill.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that's come up is that I've personally noticed is they have the Family Friendly Workplace Awards each year. They have a couple of other awards, and I don't think I've ever noticed UAF win any of those awards. So. I know that I don't know who offers it, if it's the local, my mind is blank on all these acronyms now that are floating around my head, but I know that somewhere in Fairbanks they offer awards for family-friendly workplace, for good places to work, and I don't think I've ever seen UAF win any of those awards. That's probably a little bit where he's coming from as well.
Did we hear a comment online? Something, it sounded like...
This is Adam. Yeah, sorry, this is Adam in at Bristol Bay Campus, and I just wanted to say about that flex time discussion, we definitely have those issues here where we end up working weekends sometimes or nights for different classes or different things, and it seems like over the past couple of years it's changed from the opportunity to do kind of comp time where you work Saturday and Sunday this week and you can take it later in the month or later. And then it went into the pay period where as long as you only work 80 hours in the pay period, you're okay. And now they've made it to the week where if you don't work the 40 hours in the week, so if you work a Saturday and a Sunday and they happen to be in two different pay periods or obviously two different pay weeks or two different weeks in general, you can't do that anymore. And it's made it really difficult to do a lot of our summer work, which goes over the weekends, and even our school year when we have one credit classes and weekend conferences and things, it makes it difficult to do that. So any efforts to improve that system would be appreciated.
Thanks for the comment, Adam. I see Mary Alice writing things down. So.
Yeah, I have a comment. Please go ahead.
I know from doing some research for staff affairs before, there's HR rules have been put into effect, and with the comp time during the same pay period, but it's still something that we can look in as for staff affairs and go further with it.
And there's probably someone who's better able to answer this. I could swear that there is a fact about why, you know, comp time across, you know, past a 140-hour week pay period is not done, and I want to say is it against a regulation or against the law? Or
the law.
Okay, thank you. So
it shouldn't be done. It's what we should be saying.
Yeah.
You know, I think the university as a whole is still trying to get their supervisors trained on the fact that it is against the law, and that's why we're having the issues with it.
So there is a Department of Labor is the one that regulates that. But it is possible for workplaces to put together a flex schedule plan and get it approved through the Department of Labor. How some of the companies do the 980 schedule.
Pardon, I don't mean to single you out, Trish. I should have said this a while ago. Please, when you're speaking, please speak into the mic. I don't know if anyone online can hear us when we're speaking into the mic anyway, but I think that'll help. Okay. So yes, please do speak into the mic. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the people out here understand that it's against the law to do certain things, but still, when they're kind of requested of us, we don't have a lot of a choice. For instance, we had a camp out here, a summer camp, it's called Salmon Camp, and we had a bunch of high school students, and it happened to go from a Thursday to a Tuesday, and there was nothing we could do to avoid working over the weekend. We're out at a camp, and so it definitely it makes it difficult to try and figure out, because then they say, oh, well, you can go home for, you know, 2 days or a day out of that, but how do you get home? You're out in the middle of the wilderness. And so it seems like there should be a way to make an exemption or an appeal to HR or something, that if the staff member is aware of you know, that they're going to be working this, that they'll take the time off later, that would be acceptable.
See, we're running over time. I see Yarko has a comment.
There's one thing you can do, which is not hold those CAMs, hold those seminars, do those weekend classes. I know that's a drastic measure, and it's not something you want to do, but it's the only way to drive home that this is an issue that needs to be addressed. So that's what we've done, and we've found a comparable solution there. So I'd encourage you to do that, because otherwise you're going to get taken advantage of.
All right. We are running well over time. That is our fault. I'd like to ask the group, would you like to take a five-minute break and then come back and continue with item 7, unfinished business, or should we push on through?
Break.
All right. I hear break. So we'll come back at, it looks like 10:10, maybe 10:11. All right. We're about 5 minutes. 5 minutes after our break. So let's go ahead and get back in. We are on item 7A. A request. So some background on this. Over the summer, it was pointed out to me that the motions that we moved to October to eliminate alternates, add 5 at-large seats, and then change our bylaws as needed, which we had postponed until October at the latest, would mean that elections is not going to have a whole lot of time to consider what happens, given that we have to have a 30-day election period plus a period of time open for nominations, plus we'd need to adjust our election software. So I put this on the agenda because I'm asking for this for council to move to postpone these amendments to or not postpone well move to move these amendments from October to September, so that elections will have time to address them.
I so move.
Second.
Go ahead. All right, so any further discussion? All right, let's see. So can we do we need to phrase exactly what we're saying, or
will the motion be brought to the floor in September?
The four motions that were postponed in October, 239-8, 239-9, 239-10, and I'm sorry, I didn't specify, also 239-15, which was the proxy motion that was also postponed to October in a different motion.
So the motion that we just approved was to postpone those till the September, correct?
We haven't approved.
Approved it. It was seconded.
I'm just not sure if we have to spell out. Do we need to spell out specifically that, or is that sufficient? I have no idea. I apologize.
Better do it just in case.
Yeah. So, Jeanette or Trish, if you could spell that out just for the record.
Sure. I move that we bring the four motions under unfinished business in today's agenda to be brought to the floor in September instead of October.
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We need a two-thirds vote. Do we need to ask people by name? Okay. Any abstentions? And I apologize. I meant all those in favor in the room and online. Let me go through. All those in favor online?
Aye.
Any opposed? And any abstentions, again, online? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes, and we will be looking at those items in September. All right, item 7B, the performance evaluation. We've attached the draft. We've had some discussion on this already. It is just a draft. There's no indication yet that it's coming, or I shouldn't say yet. I mean, there's no indication if there's a plan to use it at the MAUs. It will be used statewide, but we are being definitely asked for feedback. It's a very different form in some important ways, so I think it's really really valuable that we all take a look at it and be willing and able to provide feedback on what we think on it. Do you have anything to add on that? Are there any questions or comments about the evaluation form?
This is Kirsten in Nome, and just I guess how do we see it being used or potentially adopted? You said it like, you know, it's being used statewide. Is this something that you know, we should talk, like I should talk to my director to say, hey, do you think you might be using this? Is it something that may be like adopted piecemeal, this department might use it, that department might, or is it something that is either going to be MAU Fairbanks or not?
You know, I don't think I can say for sure. The president's memo about this said that, I want to say he encourages the chancellors. I think that's the language. And that memo is also on the statewide page that's linked linked in our agenda. From my limited experience at UAF, it seems like there's a lot of leeway for performance evaluations. And I personally would be surprised if this became the new form and all the old forms are thrown out. I have no idea, but I counted and across all three MAUs and statewide, there are six different official forms, and that doesn't include all of the unofficial forms that various departments have come up with, and the three MAUs all allow for that, you know, with approval. So I'm sorry, I know that doesn't really answer the question. I think that's probably a question we should take to the Chancellor during our next pre-staff.
But with that being said, the form does exist, and it is on a University of Alaska website. So if a supervisor at this point, since there is no requirement for any particular form, if a dean or supervisor opens up that form and decides they want to use it, they at this point could. Or any of the other six forms that exist.
This is one of the six. I'm including the draft in my total of six different forms.
But the chancellor is also asking for feedback on this form.
He is. Yeah.
He wants to know what UAF thinks about it.
Yes, he does.
It's a
satellite. We couldn't hear that question or comment.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
I'm not sure if you were here or you're listening when the chancellor is here. He is asking for feedback on this particular form, and he said there's a link in our paperwork today.
Yes.
That we can go on a online blog or whatever and put our comments.
Yeah, it's on the statewide webpage.
It's a staff alliance survey, but Chancellor Rogers is very interested in the UAF portion of the feedback.
Right. Other questions or comments? All right.
Well, I guess just so what would be an effective way to kind of look? Should I like send a note around to all my, you know, like campus colleagues? Should Adam and I out, you know, in our, you know, kind of send to the Kuskokwim and Chukchi that we don't, hey, you know, forward that information on to you know, our units? Do you think that would be a good way to ask for feedback?
I think that's an excellent question. There's probably another question in there about how we as a body want to communicate and whether we want to do it unit or unit-wide and then all of the units simultaneously. But to specifically that question, I think sending out the draft, you know, to your unit listserv, identifying it as a draft, and then also providing that link and indicating that the UA and UAF are looking for feedback, I think is an excellent idea.
Hi, this is Richard Machida. The one comment I had is on the communication that you sort of touched on, was that just an email message said, oh, by the way, there's this new blog post and go read it. That's not very useful communication, as opposed to like what Kirsten, who just mentioned about mentioning something. There is this one topic you need to look at it, and the chancellor is asking for feedback or something like that, as opposed to oh, there's this new blog entry. Have fun.
Okay. Noted. Thank you.
I looked at that performance evaluation thing a little bit, not in great detail, but there was something, and maybe I just didn't understand. At one point it said, you know, pick three things to look at, and that way the person will be evaluated on 30 different things. It didn't make a lot of sense to me, but again, I didn't look at it real carefully. I don't know if anybody's looked at it closely and you know, could even, you know, here has any comments to give us about, you know, hey, here are some issues I've seen, you know, or things to look at. I know, you know, I appreciate Chris's comments that, you know, his department has a really good one. This didn't seem to be, you know, and I, frankly, I don't even know that I pay attention to the performance evaluations that I get. But
this is Chris, Unit 15 again. As staff counsel, are we giving feedback on this as a group? Because I think we should.
I have not, or we don't have. We don't have a plan specifically to give feedback other than through this form. However, that does not mean that we can't have a plan. I think we're probably looking at giving feedback here shortly. We'd probably want to have something back, you know, within by next meeting, you know, or something that we can also take back to Staff Alliance, since that's where the request for feedback originated. So something we could take to Staff Alliance at the next September meeting, which I apologize, I don't have the date off the top of my head. Either as a full group, you know, now or within staff affairs, or even,
yes,
you know, that yes, absolutely, we can have a response as staff council. I don't know if that's answering your question at all.
Yeah, it does.
So, and I would certainly encourage that, you know, interested staff, you know, take part in this, and even if you're not on staff affairs, you could be part of that conversation, and staff council could, you know, make a written response or just, you know, provide some general feedback, and we can pass that back through Staff Alliance. We can pass that back to the chancellor.
If I might, my impression is, yes, President Gamble specifically directed Staff Alliance and the statewide assembly to provide him feedback. He did not set a time limit, and I wouldn't expect Staff Alliance to make a formal response at their September 11 meeting. I think it's too quick a turnaround, and so I'm betting that most of Alliance will say we didn't have enough time to get feedback. My impression so far is that most of the MAUs are just referring their constituents to the form, the online, you know, input form, so that they can summarize. For example, we received 500 responses on this form, and the overall feeling is this. I think that even in a group this small, you might have a difficulty in getting a real clear response to give to the president, because I think every one of us will look at that form differently and have different issues with it. Something like that is, unless it's a code of conduct, which some have said that this performance appraisal form is another attempt at a set of values, unless you want to take a position, something like that. But as far as specifics goes, I don't think you'll. I think it's too much work for this body as a group to do. It's just my sense of it. But I don't think you're going to get anything out of Alliance until the October meeting, and that gives you all plenty of time to decide how you want to respond to it. But I think each, in just my own opinion, I think each and every one of you should be distributing the form far and wide and making it clear that it's a draft and directing people to that form, to the online feedback form, so that Staff Alliance can get a sense of what people are thinking. That might prompt them then to take more action at the campus level too. So, for example, because like Ashley was saying, when you go to the forum, you indicate, are you Fairbanks, are you Anchorage, are you UA Southeast, are you rural? If everyone in Fairbanks that's saying something hates it, then they may want Staff Council Fairbanks to take a specific position. So,
thank you for saying that, because that's what I was going to add. And what we can do is, if you can spread the word and spread the forum, what Brad and I can do is get information for you at our next meeting with how many responses UAF has had, kind of a report, negative versus positive thoughts, and we can take a look from there and see if it's very overwhelming, maybe it is something that we want to do. If it's split, we can further discuss it then.
Or if it's 12 people.
By the way, the form doesn't ask for campus. Doesn't ask for affiliation.
Oh, we requested that, so we will make sure that.
We'll follow up on that. I think we might be confusing among ourselves that there is a SAA survey, and then we discussed a broader survey.
Right.
So I apologize for that. I think we'll follow up on that. And I think the plan was to combine that with the Smoke-Free Campus survey to make sort of a tiny, not mini survey, but a sort of general, topic.
So don't send that link. We'll send you a new link.
And, if somebody could come up with like a three-sentence explanation or whatever, like just say, this is a draft, like it was sort of a draft, performance evaluation form. It's being used at statewide. President Gamble is looking at input or whatever, just so that we all, as we're kind of passing it out, are giving the same information to people, maybe would be helpful.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent idea. In fact, I think you've summarized it very well. I may end up quoting you there.
I think there's a description already on the Ally blog also.
Yeah, rather than me picking something out, if I was given something to pass around, I'd feel a little more comfortable.
All right. Any other comments about the performance evaluation draft? Okay, on to item 9, new business. There is a motion. Is this from EMR, Richard? A motion to amend UAF Staff Council bylaws?
This is for EMR on the first. I'm looking forward to the Staff Council bylaws. Other motions to amend the bylaws in May and I will work.
Can't hear what's being said.
Sorry, I didn't have a mic. The motion was forwarded to the Staff Council office along with the other motions to amend the bylaws in May. However, I overlooked it. And noticed it when I went back to check my records that it had not been included. So,
I move to amend the bylaws.
Can you guys hear me?
Now
can you hear me?
We can.
Now you can? I move to amend the bylaws of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Staff Council by deleting Section 3, E2B, which requires the reporting of Staff Council election results at the December Staff Council meeting. That was not.
Second. We have a second. Is there any discussion? All right. All those in favor in the room? Oh, we have to go roll call. I'm sorry. Yes.
You know, I guess I have a question. Does there need to be something kind of to replace that? Does this mean that, like, the election results will never get reported or don't have to get reported? Is there, I mean, I understand the timing kind of issue of it, but do we have any issues? Do any issues follow up this if we just go ahead and approve this?
I think that it was just basically asking for the specific reported at the January meeting for the at the December meeting was removed. It's still the bylaws are still in place that the elections will take place in the fall, and I think the assumption is that the results will be reported as soon as possible, but not specifically has to be at the December meeting.
Okay.
Any further discussion? We do have a motion and a second, so we're ready to start a roll call vote.
Adam Kane?
Aye. Yes.
Kirsten Bay?
Yes.
Sarah Batiste? Deb Jepson? Mary Alice Short?
Aye.
Debbie Gonzalez?
Yes.
Leslie Walls?
Yes.
Debbie Coxon?
Yes.
Jesse Atencio? Aaron Albertson?
Yes.
Greg Simpson?
Yes.
Kim Eames? Debbie Blevins? Juan Gula? Robin Winant?
Yes.
Trish Winters?
Yes.
Jennifer Youngberg?
Yes.
Jeanette Altman?
Yes.
Emily Hemingway?
Yes.
Travis Brinzel?
Yes.
Richard Machida?
Yes.
Jorko Toivonen?
Yes.
Chris Bex?
Yes.
Is there anyone whose name I did not call?
Okay, the vote is unanimously approved. Moving to, we have no guest speakers, so moving to item 10 under committee reports, committee memberships. There is attached a current committee membership and representation. I believe at this point for the external committees, we're checking on those that are marked as inactive to see if they are still going. And the only correction I have to our list is that the H Meritorious Service Award Committee, I was asked to serve on that committee and did so, and I think that committee's job is now discharged until next year. But more on that later. I apologize. If you have questions about your committee membership, please come to Ashley or I or Nicole, and we can follow up on that. I wanted to say about our internal committees that starting September 1st, elections and membership and rules is going to be split into elections as one committee and membership and rules as another committee. If you look at our internal committee list, you can see that we have some very heavy representation on rural affairs and staff affairs and slightly less so on advocacy and EMR. Although we do have really good participation from all of our representatives on committees. Almost everyone is on an internal committee. I really appreciate that. And I'm going to ask, if you can, serve on more than one committee, you know, if you aren't already, if you have the time, I understand not everyone does, or if you are on, you know, one committee and perhaps you could switch to, you know, E or MR or advocacy, that might be something to consider. So I'm not sure what our committees are going to look like on September 1st.
Brad, this is Leslie Walls. I'd like to interject that I will be losing one of my committee members at the end of December, and the other is extremely overloaded. So I am putting out a desperate plea that anybody that can help out on the advocacy committee, I would be tremendously appreciative.
Yep. Thank you. That's absolutely the message that that I think we all need to hear. So if there are any questions, or if there are no questions, we'll move on to committee reports. Juella, do you have a question?
I did have a question. Were you able to ask the Chancellor what the status of the CDAC, the Chancellor's Diversity Action Committee, is?
Yes, and there was a report, although we have not seen it. There was a report given. It sounded like it was going to be inactive. That was kind of a final report.
What was? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
CDAC, correct?
Yes.
Is what?
Is going to be inactive. The report that they gave is their final report. He did comment more on, as part of that, the Women's Center Advisory Board is also completed, and recommendations were made. And when Wood Center is done, when Wood Center is completed, Women's Center, the recommendation was to move Women's Center into Wood Center, that there will be a space for them here, and that they now fall under Student Services, under Wood Center, under Lydia's directorship, and the funds have already been transferred. So budget-wise and report-wise, they fall under Wood Center, and then when construction is completed, location-wise, they will fall under Wood Center as well, was the main gist of the report.
So I'm a little confused. There was a diversity task force put together because they tried to close OMAD and the Women's Center, and so you're saying that task force is completed because they did the report. Is it his intent to reinvent CDAC, the Diversity Action Committee, or to leave it dead? That's my concern or question. CDAC has been around for many, many years, and is a committee appointed by the Chancellor to monitor and or hear and or discuss and strategize diversity-related issues on the campus. And so that's my question, I guess. Is he happy to let it die and we have nothing to replace it? I would take issue with that.
We'll follow up. I have in my notes from our meeting with the Chancellor that we're looking for clarity. So that may be one of the groups that has been inactive or has been on hiatus and will be, you know, either will be reactivated or is being looked at.
Right. The reason that it was inactive was because they delivered a final report at his request, and then he placed them on inactive while the Diversity Task Force did its report. And the part of the Diversity Task Force was supposed to be to set a direction and a goal for CDAC. So hopefully, I mean, I would encourage this body to demand it be reactivated. Maybe it takes a different form and a more invigorated mission, but it certainly should be there.
We'll follow up.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that if you are interested in serving or serving on either of the new committees or serving on any of the committees, please email Nicole. And we'll also be looking for committee chairs for elections and membership and rules. And rather than ask for, it's been my impression often that we ask for chairs at meetings. I suggest that the committees should choose their own chair. But I wanted to make everyone aware that we will be looking for chairs. If you are interested, please consider joining the committee and stepping up. Okay, so on to item 11, internal committee reports, EMR.
Yeah, EMR did meet and reported that. The most of the emphasis of the last meeting was on the what's going to happen in the with the elections and the election software, since the author of the software is no longer available. Well, officially, Walker expressed that he would still be willing to help out, and he sent me all of his Perl code. I looked through it. It's pretty straightforward. I don't think it's going to be a problem doing the modifications to whatever is decided at the September meeting. Just not necessarily in time for the fall election. That's still the sort of the concern.
When do the fall elections officially start?
Yeah, sorry, Nicole just whispered in my ear. There are no dates specified. There is a 30-day period where elections have to be open. That is specified. And then our period for nominations, I think, has normally been 30 days, but that would be up to us. I don't think that's that specific. And then the motion we just passed, if I understand properly, it would mean that we're not necessarily beholden to that December date, although I would assume we'd want to have our elections done before that date. I think that was the goal. Any other questions for Richard? All right.
By the way, I would like to also second Brad's plea for additional membership. If in fact we decide that we are going to get rid of the alternate, that's one of the September motions, then we lose a third of our EMR committee, which is going to be further divided in half. We'll then have two committees of one person each.
Right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Richard. Jeanette, Rural Affairs?
We have not met, but we will be meeting the first Tuesday in September, which I believe is the 3rd. Anybody is welcome to come. We are also, as Richard mentioned, we're very interested in the alternates versus at-large, and we are working on language to divide the question, I would say, in a Robert's Rules type of way, but we are working on some language to add some caveats to the reduction or the elimination of alternates and the addition of at-larges. And we are taking Richard's concern into consideration. And I obviously should say that we are not the crafters of this motion, but we have taken a special consideration and interest in it, as it can easily marginalize our rural populations. So anybody's welcome to come. It's in the kayak room, 10 a.m., September 3rd.
All right. Any questions for Jeanette? Okay. Mary Alice and Staff Affairs.
Staff Affairs has not met all summer, but it looks like we'll be meeting really soon with the load that we just picked up. Our meetings are normally the second Friday in the month, so I'll get with Nicole and double-check the schedule if we're still on at the library.
Thank you. And questions for Mary Alice? All right, and University Advocacy, Leslie.
Again, due to summer, no meetings. Due to my position right now, I am extremely overwhelmed, so I'm hoping to pull together a meeting probably mid to late September. My objective will be to see about how we go about setting up a new fund to help with training and other aspects for staff, as well as trying to arrange a coffee meeting with the chancellor for staff to have the availability to come in and ask questions in an informal setting.
Any questions for Leslie? All right. Thank you. Moving to item 12, external statewide committee reports, SHCC. I think there's meeting notes attached.
Yes. The last time we met was in May, and the meeting notes are attached. What has happened recently, this last week, most of us have probably received a brochure from EPIC, which is the hearing plan. It's part of our medical plan. It's a very minimal cost within the medical plan, but when I did call them to find out some specifics regarding EPIC, I was told that the only provider in the state is in Anchorage. So the benefit that we would get from the discounted cost for hearing loss, in the medical piece, as well as anything that we would purchase hearing loss, hearing aid-wise, we would have to go to Anchorage for. So I did send a note to Erica to ask her if they were going to pursue some providers in Fairbanks, because when I talked to EPIC, that was what they suggested, if we could talk to someone here in Fairbanks and get one of our providers to join their plan.
Did we get that information in the mail?
We did.
I didn't get one.
I received mine sometime over the weekend. It was in my mail, and I know my staff has received it, and we called. I know my staff called on Monday, and I called on Tuesday just to confirm. So it is one of those things, too, when I talked to the Representative Epic, and I asked her some other places that we go to personally for medical appointments and that out of state, what the locations were, and she said, well, you have to go several times, so you wouldn't want to go somewhere that was, you know, a real distance away, because you're going to go for your hearing test, and if you end up getting hearing devices, and there's adjustments after that, and they have the 45-day trial period, you'd want to go back. So I said to her, too, Anchorage is 350 miles away. That doesn't work for the people in Fairbanks. So even though it's a very, I want to say it's like zero or a dollar something, you know, as part of our payment within the medical plan, it's still something that's being offered that realistically we can't take advantage of. So I'll be looking further into that at the next meeting and getting an answer.
This is Kirsten and Noma. Just something that I just thought about now regarding, you know, not having access to providers locally. Like the vision, the hospital here has an eye clinic, but they are not a preferred provider under our current plan. So we don't get any, you know, any eye care here in Nome. But they are a preferred provider for the state state healthcare system, and I was just wondering if the university has any help in like advocating, you know, like going to that, you know, going to the hospital eye clinic or the hospital and saying, hey, will you, you know, be a preferred provider for us? Is there, I guess, you know, is there any way or is there any support or help to try to get an entity to be, because it sounds to me like it's the hospital has just decided they don't want to be a preferred provider. I don't know this for sure, but that it, since they're a preferred provider for a different health program, is there anybody that kind of helps to do that, having just gone there and spent $500 for glasses that I'm not going to get any reimbursed for? Again, it's not feasible to go into Anchorage for, to get glasses or whatever.
This is Debbie Coxon. My understanding is that exceptions can be made when providers are not the preferred provider list. But I'm not sure how you go about doing that. I know it's been done in the past for myself personally for a doctor here in town, and it's my understanding that the university made an exception with the emergency room doctors at Fairbanks Memorial because they were not part of the preferred providers list. So anytime you went to the emergency room, all the other charges were preferred but not the doctors themselves, and they made that exception.
This is Ashley, and I've recently gone through the process. And all I had to do was call the customer service number on my card and explain that it was the only provider within 100 miles, which actually is the only provider in the state of Alaska. And they were able to go ahead and pay for my benefits. And it was only that one time. It's a continual visit at the ear, nose, and throat clinic here.
and they cover it each and every time. I only had to call once.
Yeah, it just seems sort of awkward that, I mean, that each individual employee would have to, you know, do that. But anyway, I was just wondering if there was a, you know, if the university has any interest in trying to get, you know, an entity to be a preferred provider rather than, you know, an individual person having to go and say, hey, you know, will you cover this or...
Through the chair, Debbie, it might be, and if, of course, Staff Healthcare Committee doesn't have enough to do, you know, you might look at the process for determining who gets preferred provider status, and then obviously it's really easy to do that, but the average staff person I don't think knows that, so maybe another awareness piece, you know, whether it's just an announcement on the blog or whatever, something SHCC should take the lead on is an awareness campaign on that, because I had no idea it was that easy. I've eaten some not preferred provider charges and unaware that it was that easy.
Well, and it did. I received it through Mike Humphrey when he was here before, and I tried to get that exception. The exception was only through 2012, and I tried to get that same exception through Erica, and she would not approve that.
Yeah, and there's some
piece in that.
As long as it's behind the curtain, who knows what they can do and how they can apply it, but I think that it's good to pull the curtain down and say, hey, what's the process? And where is that in writing?
I'll definitely take it to our next meeting.
On that note, I did not get that information from the university. I actually got it from the biller at the clinic is the one who told me to call.
Hmm. And something else I wanted to point out, the Staff Healthcare Committee is going to go through some very big change this year. Melody Munson has stepped down. She will no longer be chair. She will probably be a member, but she's been really a foundational piece to this committee. And I guess you have a potential chair, though I don't know if you've heard from her as to whether or not she can make that kind of commitment. So the Staff Healthcare Committee remains a really important committee, especially in light, for example, of Jeanette's concerns regarding the biometrics and the implementation of that into our healthcare plan. So I'm curious, of the four members listed in the attachment, if all three, Leslie, Debbie, and Deb Gonzalez, are continuing to serve. And my assumption is, of course, that Mary Sue is not. If there is someone else representing UAF that's going to serve on this committee.
Thanks, Joella. Yeah, I think we missed that. We will. Fair to say, we'll take a second look at committee membership, and we'll also know more about SHCC, I think, after our next Staff Alliance meeting, and take another look at our UAF membership on that committee in our September Staff Council meeting, if that is acceptable to the group. Any other questions about SHCC? Okay, moving to item 13, and then sort of recognition of time. I think I see most groups are either not met or are on hiatus. So if I could ask committee representatives if you have a oral report, go ahead and please give it now. If not, we can move on to roundtable discussion. And I will only add that, the Meritorious Service Award Committee, item G, met. The nominations have been sent on to the Chancellor, and that committee is done with for now. All right. So without not hearing any further discussion, I think